Latter-day Saint Home Educators is pleased to bring you this audio presentation, recorded live during the May 2022 Youth Education Conference held in Morristown, Tennessee.
One of the things that we were talking about, and one of the things that I got asked to speak on, was anchoring yourself in Christ, right? So that's your overall arching theme. What does that mean to you? This is an open forum thing. You're probably going to get asked a couple of questions. So what does it mean to you? That's your base, okay.
It'll be a hook that leads to Jesus.
It'll be a hook that leads to Jesus. All right, I'm in with that.
It will help keep us where we're supposed to be.
Help keep you where you're supposed to be. Okay, I like that.
When you're being tossed around in the winds, like how she said about the kite, when you're tossed around in the winds of life, it keeps you centered towards Christ.
I absolutely love that. So there is a wicked crazy current, and that's not what I'm speaking on today, but you know, I just heard this story like 2 or 3 days ago where when a riptide comes in, it will grab you and pull you out, right? And a riptide, what are you supposed to do if you get caught in one?
Spin to the side,
right? Or just kind of go with it until it stops pulling you out, right? And then you can swim out and come back around. I think that's sometimes exactly what that is like when you're in that tossed and turn, sometimes the best thing to do is kind of kick back and be like, okay, let's see where this takes me. Let's see what happens and not fight against it, because sometimes fighting can suck, right? So what I am going to talk to you guys about is water rats and faith. That should have been water rats, comma, and faith, but turned into water, comma, rats, comma, faith, comma. Spelling is important, just in case you didn't know that, and punctuation's even more important. Who do you think my favorite rat is?
Ratatouille.
Ratigan from, oh, come on, no. Splinter, rat. There's been some famous rats in our lives, isn't there? Ratigan is from, oh my gosh, what is it from?
Great Mouse Detective,
thank you. Ratigan's the villain, and I absolutely love him because he was the only Disney character that ever scared me just as much as Dumbo. Dumbo is weird and freaky. I had some eyebrows go, wait, Dumbo? Yes, Dumbo. Because when he gets, anyway, there's a whole chalk scene in the old Dumbo that I couldn't do it. I could not do it. He's the elephant. So, you know a couple of famous rats. Now, I, in business, use one of those rats almost probably every other week in a conversation at work. And one of those things is Ratatouille, right? Can anybody explain to me what Ratatouille is?
The movie.
Wait, the food or the...
The food. The food.
Okay.
Just real quick. It's a peasant dish, right? But why is Ratatouille important in the movie Ratatouille? Ian?
Because it's really good.
Okay, it's really good.
Right, it's a peasant dish.
What does it do to the critic who takes the bite, though?
It makes him love the restaurant.
It takes him back to what? Okay, so this is one of the things I use in business. I'm always going to try to give a few pieces of advice throughout all of my talks that I ever give in life and even in business. So when I sit down with somebody new in business, I always ask them, hey, what's your Ratatouille moment or what's your Ratatouille food? And they're like, I don't understand. Right? Just kind of that same look you guys are giving me, like, I don't get it. But every single person in this world, and I'm convinced of this because I've yet to meet somebody who doesn't, and if you're like, I don't, I'm going to challenge you again, that has a food that takes them back to a time, a place, or a person, or an event with food. Right? I'm a fat guy. I like food. That's what I do for a living. So I buy a lot of people food, but I always ask them, what's the one food that takes you back? And inevitably, when they start talking about this dish or this food, or they immediately link it with their family. So in the business world, when you're trying to build relationships with people, that's one of the most effective ways I've found is to say, what's your Ratatouille food? What's the one food or the one dish that you would eat and immediately transport yourself to someplace else? Right? Does anybody have one that you can think of?
Snappy's
pizza?
No, Snap.
Oh, snap peas.
Cherry tomatoes.
Okay, what's a cherry tomato? I want to hear this.
A cherry tomatoes. Just like growing up, cherry tomatoes and raspberries, my cousins would always have them in their backyards. And so whenever we would just go there, these are like my favorite cousins. Like age, we're so similar. Like I'm like a twin with my other cousin. Anyway, and so in her backyard, she would have raspberries. And then growing up, I would just love eating cherry tomatoes just off of the vine, just fresh from the garden.
Right, isn't that amazing? Yeah. I now know that you have some cousins that you absolutely love, that you love cherry tomatoes, and you're probably not afraid of digging in the dirt to go get them the cherry tomatoes, right? What about an adult? Do you guys have any ratatouille foods? Ooh, you didn't think you were going to get called on, huh?
My grandma's lasagna.
Right? Why?
You're comforted, you're loved, you're enveloped, you're part of the family with the smell.
Okay, so again, this was not part of my class. I just have ADD, and that's kind of how I bounce around a little bit. So this is one of those things, if you ever get stuck in a conversation, ask them, hey, what's your ratatouille food? And you will be able to talk for literally 15 to 20 minutes about their ratatouille moment food, and then it usually delves into other conversations of family and things like that. But I did want to talk about Remy. Now, there is a little bit, who has Disney Plus? Okay, has anybody ever seen the little short that Remy and Emil give? Mm-hmm. Who has that? Okay, Ian, tell me a little bit about that. Ooh, actually, let me pause you. There's a specific moment in it where he talks, and if you know this one, tell me. He talks about the difference between a dog, a rat, and a cat. What is the difference between a dog, a rat, and a cat?
He says, dogs look up to man.
Okay, pause. So, if you want to figure out who your best friend is, put your wife in the trunk and put the dog in the trunk at the same time. And then after about an hour, open it and see which one's happy to see you. Right? Wow. I said that because my wife's not here. But okay. So, no, don't actually do that. Oh. But I guarantee your dog will be happy to see you. And the other person may not be so happy. Okay, what else? So a dog looks up to you, right? And a cat?
Cats look down on me.
Okay, pause. Sister Till and House. Sister T. Cats. Is that a true statement?
No.
I've met a lot of cats in my life.
Yeah, me too. I mean, I do know one of our cats likes to jump to the top of the bookshelf in my music studio and watch me
live. And they just kind of look down at you and they're like, look at my kingdom. It is glory. Right? They know it. Everything that the light touches, right? That's what the Lion King taught us. Well, what do rats do?
Rats see themselves as equal to man.
Okay, so rats see themselves as equal to man. And so that's the part of, I kind of looked at it from that point of view when I read a study. This study is done from Kurt Richter. I should have remembered that last name. Kurt Richter is who did a study. And this is not from morbidity or because he was a sick, twisted human. But what he ended up doing is he took a group of rats and he wanted to see how long before they drowned. Okay, it's kind of a little bit dark, but Kurt Richter ended up taking some rats that were domesticated and put them into a bucket. And he said, okay, let's go and see how long they take. Individually wise, it'd last about 2 minutes and 30 seconds before they would kind of dive down and try to find a way out. They would swim, 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 and then they'd come back up to the top, and then they would drown. And then another group of them would come up, and they'd kind of dive down a little bit, figure out that there was nothing there, and they would come back up, and they'd swim, swim, swim for a few hours, and then they would give up and die. Then he said, okay, well, that's domesticated rats, so let me look at what maybe wild rats. Wild rats are a little bit hardier, they're a little bit larger, kind of the whole Darwin's theory, right? They had to be strong to survive. So he took wild rats and threw them in. Most of them would last about a 3-minute mark, and then they died. Almost all of them. So Kurt at that point said, okay, why are domesticated rats swimming longer than wild rats? That hope. So this is exactly what that paper is about hope, right? And because rats see humans eye to eye and they're equal, right, we can assume that they're like us. So one of the things that they saw, though, is he went through and said, okay, I can actually identify the exact point of when that rat gave up hope. And so that rat would then all of a sudden say, yep, I'm going to die, and it would kind of relax back and start to sink down, and then Kurt would grab the rat and hold it up. He'd get it, catch its breath, stroke it a little bit, give it a little bit of food. You're okay, buddy. These are domesticated and wild at this point. No. So he would take them and then get them back to breathing, get them back to life, and then he would put them back in the water. Guess what happened? Okay, so the original wild rat would swim for about 3 minutes. Domesticated rat, max was about 2 hours. What did that little bit of hope give them?
More time.
Almost 2 days worth of swim time. So that shows you the power of hope in not only domesticated rats and wild rats, but what are we equal to as humans?
Rats.
Rats, right? We learned that from Remy. So if we are equal to rats, a little bit of hope can go kind of a long way, right? So one of the things I wanted to talk and one of the things I wanted to kind of show you guys is finding hope where it may be a hopeless situation. Okay? Do bad things always happen right at once?
No.
Okay? I said no. I see a couple of heads. I've been in a couple of situations in life where it was a couple of compounding decisions that kind of got me to a point where I was like, oh, I shouldn't be here. Has anybody ever had that? I'm not going to ask for the specific situation, right? But think about that. Of maybe you've had one where you're like, oh, maybe I should have had breakfast before I told my mom I'm not going to do math today. And you died on that hill real quick, huh? But that's the other part, though, too, is sometimes it takes a few decisions, and then all of a sudden we're like, ooh, that's bad, right? And this is where the water comes in. Have you guys ever done the experiment with frogs?
No.
Right? Again, it's morbid. I'm not condoning killing animals at all. But a frog, right? A frog doesn't really recognize, or an amphibian, cold-blooded, they don't recognize when things are getting hot. If you, what? Gradually increase it, okay? As you're gradually increasing the heat on any amphibian, all of a sudden it's like, oh, yeah, this is kind of cold. I can hang out in here, get a little bit warmer. Okay, I'm starting to not sweat because, what, reptiles don't sweat. But they do boil inside if you leave them in there long enough. All right, this is going to be the weirdest class ever. Your parents are going to be like, what did you learn? Be like, we learned how to kill rats and frogs. There's a point to this. And hopefully you take that piece back, not the we're killing stuff. But one of the things with frogs, right, is they get to that point of little by little by little by little. And before they realize that they're in trouble, they're dead. What happens if you throw them right into it?
They'll hop right out.
Lobsters do the same thing. And lobsters freak me out because they squeal. I've done it one time in my life, and after that, I was like, never again will I do live lobsters. It scares me.
Wait, did you, like, kick the lobster and then just toss it in while it's hot?
Yes, and it was the bad idea. And the other ones, crabs will fight back. I don't know, because some of you guys are from Virginia, right?
Yeah.
Fresh seafood areas. They will fight, and they pinch, and if you open up the thing, they'll, like, grab you. It's the only meal I've ever been hurt cooking from the other animal back. So I wanted to talk about kind of building up to it, right? So we've talked about rats and their little bit of hope, right? And then we've talked about frogs.
Wait, you ate frogs?
I have had frogs. They're pretty good. It's like chicken.
Yes, it's like chicken.
Right?
Have you ever had frog?
Yes, it's good. Anyways, so as we're going through and we get through in from frogs, right? We're turning up the heat. We've got rats. We're the same as, right? So hope can go a long way. What about hogs? Anybody have pigs? Right? Are they smart animals?
Oh, yes.
Right? What happens when you have the perfect enclosure and you're like, they are not getting out?
Yeah, you never have one.
Ever. I want you to understand that point. There is never a perfect what?
Enclosure.
There's never a perfect enclosure. This is important for my next point that I'm going to make. You guys ready for this? So I've got a friend down in Texas. What is Texas' almost number one pest problem that they have? I'll give you a hint. It's what we just talked about.
Wild pigs.
Wild pigs are destroying Texas' agriculture.
Really?
Because they get out and they just start rooting up everything. So, wild pigs, right? So one of my buddies figured out that if you do things sneakily, and if you do things quick, what happens, right? Just like water and frogs. What happens to the pig?
They'll freak out.
They're like, nah, I got this. You get a perfect enclosure. There's no such thing as a perfect enclosure. You think you have a perfect enclosure, what happens?
They get out.
20 minutes later, you're like, the hogs are in the flower garden again. This just happened. And your mom's like, go get them. Anyways, not that the mom's talk. Like,
keep them inside then?
So here's the point. How do you keep them inside, right? And this is what my friend did. My friend is not a godly person, but he did say, hey, you know, I've noticed something, that if things happen slowly, I don't notice it. And he's a big guy like me. He likes food. And he goes, and if there's food involved, they won't notice it. So what he ended up doing is he started creating a bait pile for all of his hogs in Texas. And he would have all these hogs and sows. He's got his trail cameras up. The first night, guess what happened? No pigs at all. Why? Because pigs are?
Smart.
Pigs went through and went, there's a camera there and there's free food. Something's wrong. Because pigs understood there's no such thing as a free lunch, right? What happened after 2 or 3 days? the pigs were like, yeah, there's food there. They're called pigs for a reason, right? That's why people are like, don't pig out. There's kind of a correlation between the two. Pigs like food. So pigs ended up going and eating. He got them used to seeing his trail cam. He got them used to the bait pile. And all of a sudden, he went through and put up one fence. One little small pen fence. What happened to the hogs that night? Nothing. Complete silence. And he's like, okay. That's kind of what I expected. About a week later, goes back, checks his trail cams. Tons of hogs back at his bait pile. Refills the bait pile, puts up one more fence. Okay, guess what happened?
No.
You're starting to see a trend, aren't you? Okay, so he repeats this. Puts a fence out. Hogs go away for a little bit and then come back. They get comfortable again. Puts the third little fence up. Hogs go away for a while and then they come back. Okay, then he puts the gate on and leaves the gate open. Hogs go away for a while and they come back. Then he goes through and in the morning he pulls up. And he puts the gate out far enough where all he has to do is go and click his little button and the gate closes. And ta-da, he has a pen full of pigs.
Yum.
Yum, right? Wild pigs, not so much. But after a few weeks in captivity, even wild boar tastes exactly like farm-raised pigs. That's what he does for his business. He lets them out on people's property, lets them run and go, and then does all the feed, doesn't have to feed them a single penny throughout the year. And then about 4 weeks before slaughter, he goes and does that, pulls them back. It's ridiculous. Wow. He has a great business model, and he's a very rich man. But one of the keys, when he told me about this, him not being a God-fearing man, it was like, that just blew my mind. I have a testimony of Jesus Christ because I know that there is a devil. Okay? I know how the devil works, and that's kind of what I want to talk to you guys a little bit about today. I want you to recognize when you have a pen getting put up next to you, and maybe you're a friend or somebody or even a loved one says, hey, come do this, and you're like, ooh, no, I know that's bad, and you go away for a little while, and all of a sudden you're like, yeah, but I really love that person. I don't need to cut them completely out, and instead of setting those boundaries that you originally had, you go back and you start feeding again, and you come back to that side of the pen. And then another thing happens, and you're like, oh, no, I can't accept that. I'm going to walk away. And then after a while, you're like, ah, but that food was really good. That environment, I really loved it. I miss that, or I miss this. And then you compromise your standards again and come back to the food pile. But now there's two barriers. And then a third, and then the gate gets added. And then pretty soon, just like a frog in water, right? You're like, I'm not stupid. I'm never going to fall for that. And all of a sudden, that water is all of a sudden hot. And you're like, oh, I didn't realize it's time to get out. And it's too late. Or that gate closes, right? Are there any rules that you have in your life where you're like, ugh, why?
Yeah.
Why do I have to follow this?
George.
Anybody want to talk about that one? Chores, right?
Yeah.
What else?
PG-13 movies.
Okay. Why not PG-13 movies?
Because my father told my mom and dad that we weren't allowed to watch specific PG movies, so PG movies are off this.
Right? It wasn't until I was in Germany on my mission that I figured out that there is no such thing as an R-rated movie in anywhere else except the United States. So what happened when the prophet says, no R-rated movies. Nothing good, or very little good can ever come from that kind of a movie, from that R-rated system. What did the rest of the world do?
It's normal.
Right? The rest of the world's like, well, we don't even understand what that means. So it was based on content. Is every PG-13 movie better than an R-rated movie?
No.
I'm not advocating we gotta go back and pull the closer that I can go watch R-rated movies. That's not what I'm saying. But what I am saying is use your discretion, right? When you see that barrier go up and now you've compromised one of your standards, guess what? That fence is probably not ever going to go back down because you get through those different lines. So that's one of the things that I wanted to talk and say.
Is there any way for us to possibly escape the fence?
Is there? Let's answer that question right now.
Yes.
How?
With outside help.
With outside help. Sometimes that outside help comes in the form of a friend, right? I'll tell that story here in 1 second. It comes in the fact of a mother, a father, a brother, a bishop.
A glorious
your heavenly father, right? He's always there. One of my best friends in high school, I had a moment of clarity. And this moment of clarity was, do not leave me alone with girl X. Okay? And I said that to him, and he goes, well, why? And I was like, just don't. Sure enough, girl X, she was my kryptonite. Like, she was my boundary that I was like, that's fence. I don't want to worry about that. So I was like, we started single dating. And all of a sudden, it was like, hey, let's come over, let's watch a movie. My parents love you. And I was like, yeah, okay. And I get over, and she's like, my parents aren't home. And I'm like, oh. Yeah. And that was when I was like, yeah, no, I can't do that. Like, I'm not going to come in if your parents aren't home. It put me in a bad situation that I had standards that I did not want to compromise. So, do you guys ever make a decision where you know it's right, but you're like, oh, I wish I didn't have to make that decision?
Yeah.
I see a smile on your face, like, yeah, that happens. Like doing your chores.
Some trips.
Right? Trips. Certain things you want to do and you make the decisions and you're like, no, I'm not going to go do that. And you hold to your standards and you know what it should do, right? So here's a quote that I actually pulled, and this one says, feeling sad after making a decision doesn't mean it was the wrong decision. Okay, it's okay to feel like, oh, like, I'm kind of upset that I didn't get to go do that X, Y, Z thing. That's okay to feel bad. It's okay to disappoint some people. And it's not necessarily because you feel bad that that was a wrong decision. All right. Do we sometimes think that if we had no problems, we'd be happier? Right? If we didn't have these little influences, would we be happier? I see a lot of adults who are like, man, if I just had more money, or man, if I just had this, or oh, if I didn't have this. That was another quote that I pulled out, and it says, happiness is not the absence of problems, but having the ability to deal with them. So that right there for me was kind of a game changer of, okay, if you can recognize when bad things are starting to happen, and I know I'm in a bad place, now I can start to kind of dig myself back out, right? Again, I have a testimony of my Heavenly Father because I do know that there is a devil. I've seen that work, and I've seen people with beautiful, wonderful lives. One of my best friends, his name was Rikus Swain. He was African-American, and he had these beautiful, like, crystal blue eyes, right? As a baby, he was, like, a model. His parents had him on all these different things. He had a trust fund already because of all of his modeling gigs. He was set for life. Didn't have to work. After 18, his monthly income was, like, 10 grand a month from all the stuff he had already done. Do you think Rikus was happy?
No.
Guess what happened about a year after his 18th birthday? Okay? He was LDS, but he didn't kind of go down that path. I was on my mission in Germany, right? 19, 19 and a half. I was out for a few months. Guess what letter I got? Hey, Rikus OD'd. He was getting 10 grand a month. I can live on my own. I can make my own decisions. And because of his earlier decisions in life, people he was hanging out with. He joined a gang. He ended up starting to drink. He was like 16, I think, when he started drinking. First off, how do you get that much alcohol at 16? I never could understand that. But then he started into drugs. And I ended up on my mission, about 6 months in, getting that letter. Hey, he passed away. And I was like, that is horrible. His family, some of his siblings saw that and were like, that's horrible. God doesn't exist. And they didn't see the paths and the pens get put in place. His younger brother just followed that same path about 2 years ago. And it's one of those moments where I look back at that family and I'm like, you had everything. Like, you had the potential of everything. And you chose a path that ultimately you ignored some of the early warning signs. One of the other parts that I wrote down is, the things you struggle with will repeat until you learn from them. Has anybody else heard that phrase?
It's a great phrase.
It's a great phrase, right? That's why I wrote it down. I was like, oh, I like that. I have this book. This book, I hear things and it goes. Brrr. I heard one thing today from a person in the back right corner that I wrote down, and then I drew a picture. Oh, not all the way back right corner. Not you. And she's like, wait, what? And I even drew a little picture. That's a habit that I've picked up from the business world. I always have a book with me, and I'm always writing things down when I hear them. But that was one of the things of when you hear something, you shift your mindset and you start to focus on them. If you're constantly wondering, okay, why did this happen and what happened and how's the devil trying to use this against me? You kind of start to see a pattern develop, right? I'm a pattern person. When I see numbers, I look for the pattern. When I have a business opportunity, I look for a pattern. When I see people talking to me, I'm like, what's the pattern? What's the angle, right? I'm a little suspicious. I like to play chess, right? I see the world as a chess game, and I'm like, okay, what piece is this person? When somebody introduces themselves, I'm like, what piece are you? Are you a pawn? Are you a knight? Are you a bishop? Heaven forbid you're the opposite queen, and now I'm dead. But it's one of those moments where I always look at it. I'm always looking for something. But have you guys ever noticed that... Do you guys ever play any games when you drive? Yeah. Right? You guys ever played Slug Bug?
Yes.
Do you ever have one person who's super, super good, and they see everything, and you're like, oh! Right? My wife was doing that, driving cross-country with her grandma and grandpa, and her grandfather wouldn't hit her hard, but he could see the slug bugs before she could. Slug bug, boom.
What's a slug bug?
Slug bug.
It's a type of car.
It's like a car, Volkswagen Beetle.
Yeah, Volkswagen.
So, my wife, she started the J.B. Hunt game.
No.
And so she goes, J.B. Hunt, J.B. Hunt, J.B. Hunt. That's worth 100 points. Because she was so sick of getting the punch bug coming back and not getting points for it, that ended up she was like, fine, J.B. Hunt. That's our new game. So, what game do we play in the car driving over? And who is the person who can see everything before everybody else?
Logan.
Logan. I don't know how he freaking sees him. I'm the one driving. I'm watching the road. And that child, every... Jamie, how I'm like, what is going on? But have you guys ever heard... There's a book that if you've never read it, I would write it down and suggest putting in your reading material. It is called The Secret.
Have
you guys ever heard of this philosophy or this theory? When you look for something, you will find it. Okay? I don't know. We'll look it up. The Google gods know everything. So that is one of the things of when you look for something, you will find it. Whether it be a J.B. Hunt truck, whether it be a slug bug or a punch bug, right? Whether it be a red car, right? A Tesla. If you are focused on something in your life, you automatically will start seeing it. If you're looking for the things that the devil's putting in your path, guess what you're going to see? You're going to see what the devil's putting in your path. If you're looking for things to be happy about and to be pleased about, you're going to find those things. If you're looking for things to be successful with, you will have those things by the law of attraction attracted to you. Now, this is one that I am a analytical person. Every time I get asked why, I'm like, oh, yeah, why? What do we do? Every time I get asked, well, just do it and do it on faith. I learned something today about getting in the spotlight, right? Who could, in a spotlight, right? I may explain this horribly bad, but in a spotlight, you've got three key positions. If you're at the very back of the spotlight, what shows? Spotlight's right in front of you. Your feet, right? I did have a director that I worked with when I was a kid, and she started throwing money at a girl, and she said, go get the best pedicure you can, because if you can't find the light, all they will see is your feet. And it was kind of like, that was rough. But it got the girl to move to the light. If you're standing in the middle of that spotlight, what happens? Well, you can see about half of you. But if you're up at the front of that light, how much is on you? Right? That was the little drawing I drew in my thing. I was like, oh, that's cool. I'm going to use that. And I totally said I was going to steal it. And I did. Ha! One of the things, when you are looking for those, though, you will find it. So if you are looking for... and being in front of, you will find those things as they come back. One of the other things, though, I did want to talk about. So me growing up as a child, I ended up having, I say, an eclectic upbringing, right? I was in a ghetto, and I say ghetto because most of the kids I grew up with, heavy Hispanic, heavy gang area. We just had, last time I talked to you, I was able to say out of 29 or 26 people, there was 9 of us alive out of my fourth grade class. I just had a good friend He was 40 years old. I talked to him 2 weeks ago on Monday. On Thursday, he had a massive heart attack and died. So there are six of us, or seven of us alive from our fourth grade class. That's how heavy of a gang, drug, alcohol infested area I grew up in. So I grew up in that during the week. But growing up, so I grew up there in Ogden, Utah. And everybody's like, Utah, please. There's three Supermax prisons, and that's where they parole me out. So I had a lot of, honestly, MS-13 gang members. Trece, Ogden Trece. It's amazing. I still have some really, really good friends. It's actually saved my life once, having bad, bad friends when I grew up.
Wait, how did you get
on? I got robbed. Yes, you may have heard this last year, because I was going to get robbed, and knowing who the guy holding the gun was actually saved my life. That's the key. Right. He was the Michael Jordan basketball card. So, George Alejandro, he's a good guy. Well, as good as you can be. And then on the weekends, right? So during the week, I'd go to school, public school, survival school. And we would go, and then on the weekends, we'd go up in Bell Hay on my grandmother's farm. So I had kind of the full breadth of bailing square bay, or bays of hell, or hell, square, I can't say it, square, bales of hay. Wow. That was even after a drink. That was pretty good. So I had that experience. I'm going to say that experience because I can't repeat that smoothly again. But we had that experience on the weekend. So one of the things that I noticed though when I was growing up is every once in a while our cars would get broken into, but never our houses. I'm going to take a drink. Why do you think that is?
Because your car could be broken into and you want to be able to know about your house. You'd more like to be able to know because you were...
You would know if your house was going to be broken into. Trust me on that one. Why else?
You never know who's in the house.
Never know who's in the house, right?
There's no priest in the car.
No priest in the car? I like that.
You have like a big wall of hay.
No, in the ghetto, no, right? We didn't build a Minecraft fort around it. That would have been awesome. We had lava and no one else was able to come in. And an iron golem.
Because no one was in the car, so they're easy to get in and out.
Right? Cars were easy to get in and out of fast. And so you would have people walk past and they could look in and see if there was anything in there. Boom, pop a window, grab whatever they wanted, and they were gone. In the ghetto, there was kind of an unspoken rule. In the ghetto, you never rob from the ghetto. Why? Because people who are in the ghetto typically don't have nice stuff, so why are you going to waste your time robbing a house with bad stuff? Right? So I grew up with the kids learning kind of that mentality. I never participated in a home invasion. That's bad. That was a line that I had. But I knew people who did, right? And they would go to places that had nice stuff. And they would break into their house. And they would steal stuff. Then they would go sell it. And that's how they lived. That was just a part of who they were. But I did want to share you this story because I kind of started thinking about that of why things would happen. Almost like Kurt Richter, right? When he said, I wonder why that rat gave up. And so one of the things I started thinking about on this was thieves don't, and I'm going to read. I'm sorry, I don't read very much or don't write very much. But I did write this on a plane a couple of weeks ago. Thieves don't break into an empty and broken house. There is nothing there to take or destroy. Instead, thieves get to know their targets and attack them when they are the most vulnerable. When they travel, when they go to work, one or when children are home alone, giving the thief a greater possibility of success. Now, some people prepare their homes with security to protect themselves and their possessions. Security systems, right? I grew up in the ghetto. How many of us had security systems? No, almost nobody. Guess how many signs we had, though, saying we had security systems? Almost everybody had them because it was really easy to go steal the neighbor's sign and then put it in your yard. And they're like, you got ADT? And be like, whoa! ADT mean Andre Dita? Anyway. Yes, at that point. So, security system, dogs, right? We always had dogs. Always. We had pit bulls growing up as kids. They're the best protection dogs. Automatic lights, windows, door alarms. Do any of you guys have these?
No.
Right? Some of them, right? Some have dogs, some have locks. Does anybody have locks in their house?
Yes.
Anybody not have locks at your house? And what's your address? No, we're not going to do that. So, other people... Some even go the exact opposite way, and they're like, I don't want to deter, I'm going to refute. So they go through with, they collect guns or maybe employ an offensive or a defensive stratagem, right? They're like, please, no trespassers. You come on, you're getting shot. That's a thing in Tennessee. I don't know if you guys knew that, right? Some security systems actually warn the intruder, right? You have the yard signs. You have automated doorbells, right? They ring it and they're like, may I help you? In Las Vegas, they would come by and knock on the door. And they would be like, hey, is Jeff home? And they were just doing it to see what time you were home. They were scoping out and canvassing your neighborhood. In Texas, there's actually a whole, it's called homeless speak or homeless writing, where gangs will use it and mark your house of, there's a single woman here, there's no dogs, they go to work during the day. They have different symbols that they'll put on your curb when they run through so they know what houses to hit at what time of the day when they come back. This is a whole thing. It's amazing. So in Vegas, they would do it next to your door, right on your door jamb. They would make little marks with a nail if you weren't home. In Texas, they would do it on your either on your door or on your curb. So sometimes we have cameras, right? This adds an element of protection as most thieves will choose softer targets, right? I will admit there's a few yard signs that I've stolen in my life and put in my front parents' yard. My parents were like, where did you get that? I'm like, don't worry about it. They're like, okay. Because it helped our security, right? Or our perception of security. So most thieves will choose a soft target. They move on and they move past. Some people have the means of taking us to a next level as they deploy the ultimate defense, a combination of all things mentioned, even at the point of private security. As the risk and danger outweigh the cost of protection. Does anybody live in a private community? In Vegas, there are things like gated or private communities. Guess what? You just wait for the car in front and then you just go in behind them, right? Those were the targets in Las Vegas, was you would wait for the private security. But if they had a security guard, you knew, okay, they're actually a little more serious. We used to live in Vegas.
Which some of those gates there are terrible. You can just reach your arm through and pull
the lever. Right, you can reach through and grab the lever. Super good security. So sometimes we build up all these security measures, right? And we're building them up and we've got cameras, we got that, just to give us security. So I suggest that we need to build our own security, as the devil is a thief, right? The devil, he watches and he prays when you're at your weakest guarded moment. Ill-prepared or even in a moment of opportunity. Have you seen good people do dumb things?
Yes.
In a moment of weakness where you're like, nope, I've got everything buttoned up. And there's that moment where the devil is like, oop, gotcha. If you haven't seen that in your life, give it a few more years. You'll have that moment where you're like, oh, dang it, I screwed up. Satan will strike when and where he can, and we can take steps to build our own security. So you can take those steps that when you see that little bit of a hog fence coming up and in, you can go, nope, I understand that's bad, and you can put up your security gate for it. When you're running through and you have that moment of absolute loss and just, I screwed up, I'm done, this sucks. All you need is a little bit of what?
Hope.
A little bit of hope. A little bit of reprieve to reset your life and to say, okay, here we go. One of the reprieves in my life, and one of the last pieces of advice I'll give you before I close it, and we'll open it up for questions and stories after. But one of the things that I have in my life that I have taken advice from my mom is... not to have a good wallet, but this right here.
Double recommend.
This is the one thing that my mom said. You can only get but in so much trouble when you honestly have a temple recommend in your pocket.
Wait, why?
Because you have to answer certain questions to go to the temple, right? There's certain standards that you follow. I have men and women in my life that are not members of the church that pretty much verbatim follow the questions on the temple, or on the temple recommend. People I work with. Because they see the value in them. They see, okay, am I honest with my fellow man? Do I strive to be honest? Do I strive to do things? Do I follow Christ? Do I love God? Those are all things. You can only get in but so much trouble if you have an active temple record in your pocket. And the reason I say sometimes we need that little bit of hope, or sometimes we need that little bit of reprieve when we're drowning, I have found my pause moment at the temple. Some people find it in prayer, right? They get on their knees. They find a quiet, out-of-the-way place. Sometimes they go for a bike ride. Sometimes they need to go hiking. Sometimes they need to go fishing. Sometimes those are just stressful. My pause moment, or my little moment to get a little bit of reprieve and get picked up out of a bucket when I'm drowning, my pause moment to breathe and to get things right and to catch my breath are at the temple. So if you don't have a pause moment or a place or even a person where you can say, I need a quiet, comforting moment, I urge you to find that person, find that place, find that thing, so that you can get enough hope to keep swimming until you don't drown. Does that make sense? All right. I never know how to end these ones, so I thank you guys for coming up, and thank you for kind of coming through the sun and up the hill to come hear me speak. And I appreciate you being invited back again, and that's what I've got. So thank you.
Latter-day Saint Home Educators is a nonprofit, all-volunteer organization dedicated to providing inspiration to homeschool families. We hope you enjoyed this record. If you are interested in listening to more recordings or would like to participate in a future conference, please visit our website at ldshe.org.